This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey guys, quick thing. The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only question left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Arsenal managed to win the most boring game of Premier League history yesterday, and it gave us a little bit of an insight into the depth that is going to be provided this, well, the close of this season at least, as we approach the run-in and the very important points that remain between now and May. We've got some other stuff to talk about too, and to do that, I'm joined by a very special guest. Let's talk about Arsenal. Hello and welcome to the Gunner Talk. I'm joined by a clearly fellow DMB loving man, Mr. Elliot. How are you doing? You good, Joel?
Yeah, good. I'm just, it's a bop. It's a bop.
It is. It was genuinely universally hated when I first switched to it. Like the listeners did not appreciate, because we used to have Foles, which are a UK rocky type of band, which they enjoyed a lot more. But it's like when I was, I'm sure when you changed the recent, not so recent, I think it was more than a year ago, you changed the Vision intro music, there was a little bit of pushback, right? To be fair,
there's always pushback when you change the music. Always pushback. But yeah. You know, I mean, you got to change it up every once in a while, keep people guessing.
Yeah. Indeed. Thankfully, what's not changing is the fantastic generosity that's continually shown by the Arsenal fan base. And
that is the most professional segue. I like, kudos to you, man. As someone who's tried and failed at those many times, that was brilliant.
Well, you know, it's not bad. It's daily practice at 8 a.m. every single morning is what that achieves, clearly. But yes, of course, we are going to be talking about Arsenal in the title race as well. And I'm very happy to be joined by Elliot from Arsenal Vision, for those that haven't realised, to do that with. But Elliot is also here for another reason, and a certainly more important reason, which is to talk about a very good cause, which has raised over the last few years an incredible amount of money. And we're aiming to do exactly the same. So, Elliot, go for gold, mate.
Oh gosh, here we go. I'm in on goal. Can't blow it now. So first and foremost, I promise we will talk some Arsenal stuff, some like proper Arsenal stuff. So just, you know, don't get mad at me for this. But look, all kidding aside, I think we have a chance to do something with this fundraiser, and that is to support children refugees in the Zaatari camp. And one of the things that I think always happens whenever you support any cause is people say, "What about this cause or these people who are suffering or this situation where there's need?" And to be clear, those situations exist all over the world and they're heartbreaking, but it can have a chilling effect on giving at all, right? It can lead you to just not give anything. So we determined that we're going to back this cause because our club cares about it, because they've gone and made an impact there, and we have a chance to make an impact. I had a chance to go to the Zaatari camp in Jordan last year. It's an 80,000 person refugee camp. More than 40,000 of those refugees are children whose only fault is that they were born in a war-torn country. They've lost family, they've lost friends, they've lost homes, they've lost the things that I take for granted with my kids, a stuffed animal, a pillow that was what they always used to sleep with. And now they're in a refugee camp where they face gender-based violence, child marriage, child labor. And Arsenal goes there and creates these programs called Coaching for Life, where they bring them in and let them be kids and play football. And we know the transformative impact of football to begin with, but they get to go through resiliency sessions, learn about standing up for their rights, avoiding the challenges that they face in the camp, and then making friends who become allies for them, because in a refugee camp, building trusting relationships is hard. So they get all of that. And then they get to connect to Arsenal. And if you think you love Arsenal, because I think I do. Wait till you see someone for whom Arsenal is their entire lifeline and connection to the wider world and what it means to them. They know all the players. They know all the results. They know the women's team and the men's team. If you want to check out my YouTube channel, the Arsenal Vision YouTube channel, I did an interview with Leah Williamson. She can talk about it. You can see some of my footage from going to the camp. But I'll simply say this. If you give to this cause, right now a generous donor has said they will match £150,000 worth of donation. So if you give £1, you're giving two. If you give 10, you're giving 20. And any donation enters you to win a VIP box ticket to the Bournemouth game, the second to last home game of the season. So someone is, if you give, even if it's a pound, and only give obviously if you can, but if you can, we're going to do that drawing late April. You may have a chance to be in a box, meet the podcasters, hang out, and be in a box for the Bournemouth game. And as someone who went to last season's Bournemouth game, was definitely one I'm happy I was at. Hopefully this season will be a little easier to handle.
Indeed, yeah. I was thinking about that game earlier in the day, and I realized when, obviously, you listening to you talk about this on the other Arsenal Vision shows, that was the game. We may not be able to promise the same level of fireworks. To be honest, I don't think we want the same level of fireworks.
I don't want that.
We will happily take another boring 2-0 like we saw yesterday against Luton, of course, in that game. But as Elliot points out, what is happening is an amazing thing every single year. The Elliot and the Vision Boys, and Andrew, of course, who gets involved too, and helps to support this, is brilliant. The numbers last year were staggering. And, you know, from myself working in and around Arsenal, when I go to games, when I talk to people at the club and have mentioned this as well, they are so appreciative of the community that Arsenal Vision has built. And obviously last season, you guys here at TGT were a big part of it as well, because we helped raise over £1,000. So it'd be great to see if we can do that again and more. So if you go to the link, as Elliot describes, down in the description, we're already over £50,000, which is amazing. And a third of the way to that target, of which can be trebled, of course, should we reach it. So please do go to the link down in today's video description and give anything you can. And if you can, please. But as we promised, we're going to talk about Arsenal now. And I did mention the boring game that we witnessed. I don't like using that word. But to be honest, after all of the drama of what was perhaps the most controversial 0-0 in history, I was quite happy to just witness, with five changes made to the lineup that, of course, drew against City, to just witness quite a simple result that got us the 3 points that we needed. A point in the season where this time last year, with nine games to go, we started to drop points. We started to falter. And I think, Elliot, it was just with those changes made, nice to see an element of control and simplicity about the result.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, last season we got criticized for being too emotional. This season we're criticized for being too boring. You just can't win, can you? Right. But like, all kidding aside, having the ability in the heat of the run-in to find a moment like this where you can take the temperature down and take the emotion down and get some rest for players and have a look at some players that maybe the manager wants to play a role in the run-in but needs to have confidence in, this ticked every box. I mean, the only box maybe you could have used ticking is the goal difference box, because I fear, as at time of doing this live stream, Liverpool haven't faced Sheffield United yet and they could close the entire goal difference with that game. But aside from that, I think this was exactly what was needed in this moment before the intensity of Bayern, after the intensity of City, a lull in the excitement. And, you know, I think Rob Edwards said it best. Arsenal can play any type of game now, right? We can play a physical game. We can play a passing game. We can play an attacking game. We can play any type of game now. And that versatility, I think, is what makes us maybe the best team in the league.
Absolutely. It's that ability to be malleable to any side that we come up against. I didn't necessarily, I was listening actually on the way to the Luton game back to yourself and Clive talking about City. And it was Clive talking about how, you know, we analysed Gabriel Jesus as a player for his merits in the final third, but he was tasked with a different job against City. And so we have to instead more so judge him on his merits, what he did in the defensive third, which was very, very good. And it did make me think about things in a different way. And Arsenal do approach games with an element of maturity and a capacity to adapt, unlike, I think, any other team, really. I think City are just so dominant and so good that they just go into every game and can do that. I don't see City ever going to a game and playing like Arsenal did at City, because they're, you know, the quality means they don't have to. Arsenal are still, you know, in some degrees, you would say, punching above their weight in this arena. Yeah. Some regards. So they have to go and do that when they go and play against City. But I still, from my perspective, don't think that we went there with the intention of doing it to the degree that we did. And we had to adapt to what City did, which would play very, very well, actually, what City did. And to then switch out of that mode to play 2-3 days later, which is what we're going to have to do over the next 6 weeks, potentially longer, you know, until the end of the season. The last week could be the final time we don't have a game midweek, should we progress past Bayern, of course, in the Champions League. But to see us change out five players and play the way that we did against Luton, which wasn't, you know, amazing, enthralling football, and certainly the Emirates atmosphere inside the ground, I can tell you, was not one that reflected that of a game that was enthralling by any stretch of the imagination. But I was still surprised by how many changes we saw. And I was actually a little bit surprised about some of the specific changes that we saw. So I'm curious as to what your initial reaction was when you saw the lineup.
I thought there'd be change, but I didn't think there'd be those changes. You know what I mean? I think the thing that's always tricky when you make that volume of changes is it's not just that you're going from one level of player like Bukayo Saka to another level of player, with no disrespect intended, like Reece Nelson, but you're also changing the entire dynamic. I mean, if you think about it, the way we've been playing recently, especially with Kivior, Ben White's done more of the inverting. So we rock around to the right-hand side where we build play and create our overloads. Well, now he brings Zinchenko in. So now it's the left side that's inverting, and you're rocking around and creating overloads for Leo Trossard, right? And for Emile Smith Rowe, which is very different, you know, and then you have Thomas Partey cleaning up behind that side as opposed to Declan Rice. So the layer of protection is a little different. The pressing and ball winning is a little different. It's not just that you're changing the players. It's that you're changing the automatisms, right? The coordination. I think it speaks volumes to the quality of this team and the quality of Mikel's coaching that you can make those changes, disrupt the system that much, and still look like Arsenal. Maybe not at the absolute peak of our powers, but still look a lot like Arsenal. So I was surprised by the changes. I think a lot of it made sense. The one thing I was just slightly surprised about, I thought maybe it'd be a chance to see Jesus back at center forward, because I think Mikel's got a big decision to make about who's going to play center forward in the Champions League. And that's where Jesus has always just torn it up in that competition. So I thought maybe we'd get a look at him. But now with Kai on 9 yellows and worrying about that for the next 2 Premier League fixtures.
8 yellows, I think it is.
Whatever it is, 1 more and he's suspended. So
I think it's 2 more. I'm pretty sure it's 2. I had this massive debate yesterday with like 3 other reporters about this. I'm only not aggressively, but really coming back on this, because I was like so determined to point out that it was like, no, we have 3 games until the threshold. And if he gets 2 more, that's it. So it's 2
and well, so let's see what Mikel himself said. On Kai receiving his 9th booking, quote, we have to be careful. Wrong. Hopefully he doesn't get booked anymore because of this. Okay, so if it is wrong, that makes me feel better. And kudos to you for knowing better than the person who interviewed Mikel and Mikel not being up to date. That sets my mind at ease. Yeah. Doesn't change the fact, though, that I do wonder, you know, I think Kai's done brilliantly, but I do wonder if we're going to see Mikel try to get a look at Jesus up front before the Bayern game.
Absolutely. Yeah. Trust me, I was doubting myself the amount of times that people were turning around to me, because I wrote this piece about the fact that if he gets booked against Luton, Brighton and Villa, he misses 2 games, which is kind of a fantasy, complete opposite, a nightmare, if you suggest. But, you know, this strange scenario. I think he's got 1 booking in his last 18 games before this one, and now he's managed to get a booking with 2 needed to, of course, find that suspension.
Well, and to get one for diving is a bit of a shame, obviously, as well. What I will say is, let's hope Mikel knows what the actual number is, because we don't want him picking his lineup based on the wrong number. To your point, by the way, FB Ref website has him on 8 yellow cards. So I and the interviewer and Mikel stand corrected and bow to your superior knowledge.
If there's anything to have superior knowledge about, can I have a frequency of yellow cards? Yes, I'll take that as my mastermind specialist subject. But what we saw, obviously, was a team that, you know, we weren't necessarily threatened too much by Luton. They're a bereft side anyway. They're lacking, I think, 13 odd players that are also injured. And so Arteta clearly saw this as an opportunity to rotate. Bukayo Saka obviously wasn't in the squad whatsoever. From what I'm told, it's not serious. It's just a case of they just didn't think it was worth risking him in any capacity because he wasn't able to complete all the session from the day before, which is good. Smith-Rowe obviously coming in. We saw Zinchenko play at left back, which was an interesting... I think he had one of those games where... where he makes those mistakes that he makes. In nearly every single game, you find him lose the ball in a position of threat. And that then completely overshadows everything else, because that's all that people remember, is they remember those moments where he loses the ball. And are you okay? Something going on in the background?
The dog. The dog is going nuts. Yeah, we got dogs everywhere, man. This place is now filled with them.
But then you've got obviously the wide areas where we usually have Martinelli and we usually have Saka and such, you know, free-flowing attacking power. Instead, it's Trossard, who's a player I really have a lot of time for. And then Nelson playing on the right, which I think of the two areas to play Nelson, I prefer when he plays on the left more so than the right. And I think he's more of a left winger than a right winger. So it demonstrated the depth that we do have. It wasn't an amazing performance, but do you put that more down to the fact that there was such a frequency of changes as opposed to what the players and where they stand in our minds right now?
Yeah. Like, again, I don't want to be repetitive, so I'll try to think of a way to say this differently, but I think anytime you make that much change, you make it difficult for any one of the individual players to excel because they're not slotting into a seamless integration environment. They're slotting into a revised environment in terms of the patterns of play and the automatisms. That's why I think Emil Smith Rowe deserves quite a lot of credit for thriving in that role when I think we saw others have mixed performances. Zinchenko for me is an interesting one because I don't think I've ever seen a player scrutinized in quite the same way he is. You know, Tom, like if he misplaces a pass, you're going to hear about it for the next 5 days. And then you go and look at the data and it's like, he led us in final third entries and he led us in progressive passes and he's near the top in touches and he completed 85% of his passes and all the things that, you know, we can do. But he does have this way of making the giveaway that creates a discomfort that simply doesn't seem to be either happening or at least doesn't seem to be as noticed when someone else does it. And I can't really explain what it is. I mean, look, he plays with a lot of freedom. We saw him yesterday, just like we always do, floating into the right half space at times and, you know, standing on the right side of midfield and going up and joining the attack. He had just a thunderous shot that he took that was blocked. I think there was a handball check. It wasn't a handball, but I think that was flying in. He gives us a lot, but he gives it to us in a way that for some reason seems to transmit a lack of security, even though I'm not convinced that someone like Kibior, for example, is airtight, you know, watertight, secure. We saw him get dribbled past by Bernardo Silva a couple times in the City game. We've seen him give the ball away as well and not be as clean in possession. But I'll admit, I do find it a tricky one because even myself, I find myself watching Zinchenko and feeling concerned. And yet, then I look back at the game and he sort of did all the things you need him to do. So I really don't know what to make of that. I'm sure Mikel has a much clearer vision of what he wants from that position. We'll just have to see what that is.
Yeah, I think that what the game obviously showed is that, and to be honest, I don't necessarily foresee a game like this one left for us. I look at every game that we have remaining this season, and you've got midweek games like Chelsea, obviously the two Bayern Munich games, and our weekend games, you know, a trip to Brighton is nothing to be sniffed at. You know, hosting Aston Villa, I know that Man City pummeled them, but you'd expect them to have Ollie Watkins and probably Martinez back for the game in which they come to the Emirates. So they're going to be a challenge. You know, they probably see us as maybe a team they can maybe get at more than City, because, and I know they've beaten City as well this season, but...
Well, Emery's going to target that game, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
of course.
Like, if there's one that he wants, that'd be the one, yeah.
And then you've got Wolves away, which, you know, Wolves have taken some big points off teams this season, despite them having struggles in games maybe you wouldn't expect them to. Chelsea at home, then Spurs away. Then if you get past that and you get to the semi-finals of the Champions League, you've got either City or Real Madrid. You're looking maybe at the Bournemouth home game, which, of course, you can go to if you'd like to donate towards the cause, which you can find a link to in the description, and sit in a box and meet some of the Arsenal Vision podcasters. But that's really the only other game I see potentially being viable for anywhere near as much rotation. So I guess the question is these weeks going forwards, based upon what we saw yesterday and based upon our knowledge of the team, how comfortable are you that we've got a squad that can effectively rotate or at the absolute minimum manage minutes proficiently?
Let's put it this way. I think we have the deepest squad of the three competing for the title. I really genuinely believe that. I mean, if you look at the kind of players City have in reserve, Matias Nunez, Oscar Bob, Rico Lewis, Gvardiol, who granted played well against us, but has been, you know, it's been a bit of a stop-start season for him. I don't think they have the wide attacking talent that they once had at the absolute elite level when, you know, they had peak Sterling and peak Mahrez. I really believe we have the depth. Liverpool, Klopp has shown he'll trust anybody, which is to his great credit, but I still, again, think they get young very quickly and experienced very quickly. It is entirely possible that, you know, if Saka had started yesterday, Reece Nelson or Eddie Nketiah is not making the match day squad. Like, it's that simple. They're just not making the squad. On our bench against Bayern or against Brighton, we're going to have options like Trossard, Jesus, Tomiyasu, Zinchenko, Thomas Partey. I do think where the rotation is really going to come in, we talked about this on our pod today a little bit. Thomas Partey's close to 31 and Jorginho is 31. I don't think athleticism is either of their strong suits, and we know Thomas Partey struggles to stay fit. It wouldn't surprise me if what Mikel is trying here with Partey is to get him up to speed so that he can just keep alternating them a little bit. Because I don't think you can expect Jorginho to play at the top level every 3 days in this intensity. And I don't think Thomas Partey has ever proven he can do that. But what if they can share them alternating games, right? So it's Rice and Partey for Brighton, and it's Rice and Jorginho for Bayern, and then it's Rice and Partey for Villa, and then it's Rice and Jorginho for Bayern. And that may be the way Mikel wants to do this, because the other players, I think he will largely lean on them. And let's be honest, I think fans, because we sit around and have a lot of time to just chat Arsenal, think about rotation a lot. But when you look at the run-ins that like City had last season or Liverpool had the season they won it, the big players didn't rotate. Haaland, I think, started every single Premier League and Champions League game that City played. I believe that's right, or close to it. Salah did the same thing. So I do think the key players will play every game, and hopefully they make it through.
We talk often about like the idea that a player like Saka, who is mostly available throughout the course of the season, you know, he's obviously missed this game. He missed the Man City home game and was fatigued for the Man City away game. Wasn't yet back from that international break issue. But we talk about these players, they should be able to play 50 games. Or the expectation at the top level is the top players play 50 games a season. And if you look at Manchester City, if you look at Erling Haaland, who will play 50 games a season, barring injury. And so if we do get, say, in the summer, I think there is expectation that we're going to see some changes. I think we want a midfielder. I think we'd like to sign a forward. I think Clive will be banging on Edu's door to go and get us a winger.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. And the same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. And I think that maybe a defender is also in there, and to make it 8 potentially rather than just 7, because there's been a lot of this season where we've only had 4 senior fit competitive defenders. Yeah. So I think that 8th defender is important, and potentially a goalkeeper if Ramsdale moves on as well. So how do you get into this space where the expectation is that the top players in the game should be expected to play 50 matches, but you've then got to sell a project to potentially incoming players that you're coming into a squad? I mean, I'm seeing links with Rodrigo, for instance, at Real Madrid, who the argument is if they sign Mbappe and they sign some other players, where is he going to play? Well, you've then got to say, well, if Arsenal are going to sign a player like Rodrigo, you've got to break Martinelli and Saka out of this. So how do you then convince a player like that to come into the team?
I think we think that's harder than it is if you're at the top of the game and you're competing for the biggest trophies. Mm. I think if you have a chance to go play for a team that was in a Champions League final or semifinal, and for a team that went down to the last day on the, for the Premier League in the last couple of seasons and is one of the big clubs on the planet, I think players back themselves. What you don't want is the Cedric type signing, the guy at the end of his career who's content to take a decent wage and be the backup. What you do want is a Trossard who backs himself to go make an impact and maybe take someone's shirt. Right. I think that's what you do want. And like, I think that is just the standard of what happens at these big clubs is we like you. We think you're going to get minutes. We think you're going to fight your way into the squad and play important games. And there are definitely enough minutes to go around if you build your squad that way. So I don't know that it's as hard to do as people think. First of all, the number of clubs that pay Premier League wages is shrinking. So if you say to a player, hey, come to Arsenal, live in London, compete for the Champions League, compete for the Premier League at one of the big clubs in the world and make a wage that maybe no other club that's in for that player can pay, I don't think it's that hard because the only clubs that are going to pay that wage are, you know, City, Chelsea, United, Liverpool, Bayern, Barca, Real. That's about it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if those other clubs are in for them, they're probably competing for their minutes there anyway. So I understand the theory that it's hard to get a player to buy into that, but I actually think players will back themselves if they're good enough. And you want more of those kind of players who will fight their way in than you want the players who are content to see themselves as a sub.
Yeah, I guess it's this preconception that we've had built up over a long time as Arsenal fans that, you know, we wonder sometimes why a player will go to a Manchester City when minutes aren't necessarily guaranteed. Like Gvardiol goes there despite the fact that they've got Diaz and they've got Ake, you know, and they've got Stones. And you're thinking, well, where is Akanji, of course, as well, can play across the back four. You're thinking, where is he going to play? But he goes there because he knows he's going to maybe have less minutes than he had at Leipzig, but he knows he's going to compete for the top trophies. And they're going to, I think they had Leipzig, didn't they, in the group stage and just blitz past them. So, or maybe not blitz. I remember Lois Openda, I think, getting a couple of goals before they turned it around. But still, I think the point stands that they are expected to go further than these types of teams. So Arsenal now being in this bracket, you know, will attract a different type of player. And those players will have less, I guess, question marks about a potential move to Arsenal, where one of those question marks before was, well, you know, I want to be playing every single game, every single minute, because I believe as a team that aren't yet at the top table, and I am a player that believes they should be at the top table, I'm going to take you there. So therefore, I'll be playing every week. But if you already are at the top table, then those players don't necessarily have that argument in the same way. And actually, it's more so they have to prove themselves to Arsenal rather than the other way around, which is perhaps what maybe we had to do to get into the conversation for Declan Rice, because when he was, you know, at West Ham a couple of years ago, the conversation was about him moving to City or Chelsea, when at the time Chelsea were still, you know, just off the back of a Champions League victory, for instance. So now Arsenal do compete for these players, and we've got to maybe move our mindsets away from thinking about the Arsenal of old and the differences now. In terms of where I've already kind of touched upon it in terms of the eighth defender is kind of a potentially an area where you think, where I think we could strengthen. I think a lot of people do as well. But where do you foresee this squad still adapting and changing? I've mentioned Rodrigo. Feel free to go nuts with names because people love that shit, you know. But how do you feel about names and areas that will be upgraded so that the depth next season takes Arsenal from a side that are, I'd still categorize as somewhat punching above their weight a little bit, to a team that are certainly on an even keel with City and the like?
You get these windows where certain positions, there's elite quality available in certain positions and not others. I think this window to me looks like a bad summer window for striker. I don't see a player I'd necessarily want to push the boat out for. Now, with one exception. If you can get Alexander Isak, you do whatever you can. I really believe that. We did a scout. So over on our Patreon, we do scouting videos, and it's not like YouTube comps. We go into the Y Scout scouting dashboard. We put it up on the screen. We look at it together. We break down all the film. Isak just looks brilliant. Now, you're going to get injury risk with Isak, and that would be the downside. And I don't know that Newcastle would sell. But if we're going for a striker, that's the one I'd go for. Gyökeres, we did the scouting video on him. I like him, but I think those Portuguese clubs don't sell cheap, do they? And I think he's going to go for more than maybe the player he is. I think he carries the ball well. He's lethal with his finishing. The people that analyze advanced metrics and look at the data have big questions around him. And I just think there's enough question marks around that, that I don't know that I'd want to go as big on that. Mm-hmm. Osimhen, I don't think we're in for, and frankly, I don't think he fits the way we approach the game, even though I think he's pretty good. He's having a bit of a down season. He has one really elite season on his resume, so I don't think he's the answer. Then you get guys like Sesko, you know, still too raw, still up and coming. Evan Ferguson needs another move or stay at Brighton and play. He's got to play.
Yeah.
You know, at Arsenal, he's going to come in and be someone who's battling for minutes. This is a player that needs to play. So I don't think we want a developmental player in that respect.
Well, the problem with Brighton players is like there is no middle ground anymore for Brighton players. You go from Brighton to Liverpool. You go from Brighton, in the case of White, to Arsenal or Trossard. You know, Ferguson... Like Ferguson is one of the hyped kids that is a pretender that hasn't yet delivered to, I think, justify the hype that we get for him yet.
Yeah, no, I look, the only absolutely elite striker that might move this summer other than Mbappe is Isak. And if you can get Isak, you do anything you can to get him. He's an Henry regen and he's just fantastic. And yeah, I'd do anything to get that player at Arsenal. We wanted him previously. We were linked to. I'd probably go that far for him. I think he's worth it. The challenge there is whether you think the injury issues are worth staying away. To that extent, because I don't know that striker is the position to do, because he's actually the only one I would do, and I don't think he's going to be available, I think the way to go this summer is go with a wide forward. Go into next season where Kai plus Jesus is your striker core, plus maybe Martinelli can play in that position. You know, you see what you got. And you go with a wide forward. I think Nico Williams is a really interesting name that a lot of people like a lot at Athletic Club. And that's a player that if he moves, I would be in for. The one that you could fall in love with easy is Pedro Neto. But if you're worried about Isak's injury record, I think Neto's is too substantial to go for.
So
I like the idea of maybe going for wide forward instead. I think Nico Williams would be the one to do. And I think you can get him reasonable. I think he's got a release clause. That is
Neto.
Reasonable. Yeah. Nico Williams.
Oh, sorry, Williams. Yes, yeah. 50 million euros, so about 42 million pounds, as far as I'm aware. Yeah.
So I think Nico Williams would be just a really smart piece of business if he'll move, and that would be one you go get. Pedro Neto would be one that you just have to trust the medical team know what they're doing. If you're going to go absolutely huge on striker, I'd do it for Isak if he can move, and that's kind of where I'd be looking.
Yeah, like Lokeres for me is a player that I like a lot, that I've watched a lot now this year. And I absolutely understand the reservations because there is a lot of context with him, the league he plays in, the fact he'll be 26 at the start of next season, which for some people is still too old. I personally think it's a great age to buy a striker out. I think you're going into some of the best years of your career. And I think his career trajectory has shown that as the level steps up, he steps up. And I think that's a really good trait to have as a center forward.
Can I throw one thing in there, just Tom, about him to keep in mind? He's finishing at a really hot clip right now. So the underlying data, if you care about that stuff, says he's in a really rich vein of form in front of goal, but he's outperforming that. And historically, his shot numbers haven't been at the elite level. And one of the stickiest stats across leagues, across clubs, across years among elite strikers is just shot totals. And his are sort of below that elite level set. That gives me a little bit of pause, especially for a guy who's playing in the championship in his age 25 season. But like, we did this scouting video on him and candidly really liked what I saw. So I wouldn't be like upset if we got him. I just worry that he's going to go for big, big money. And I'm not sure he's quite in that tier.
If Isak had the availability of Gyökeres, like it wouldn't be a competition at all. Like that is the thing with Isak is, it's just a question mark about can he stay fit. Not only that, but you've already got his best creative mate in the world at your club, in Martin Odegaard, because they played a season together at Sociedad and was stunningly good. You know, that was the season where both of them arrived really at the levels where we've appreciated them. I know Odegaard's been known for years, but trust me, that season at Sociedad was the season where Arsenal started, you know, thinking, yeah, I think this guy can go to that next level. So, and it was Isak, of course, that he was, you know, supplying. And his technical ability, Isak, is for a tall guy, is sublime. And I know that's why you get the Thierry Henry comparisons, because for a tall guy, he controls the ball exceptionally well. Midfield is, again, like, and I think it's similar with striker. Like, I don't think that the thing about this summer is there isn't a Declan Rice. There's not a nailed on guy that, you know, Arsenal are going to go and spend 100 million on, and that guarantees you just quality, guaranteed immediate impact, no transition time needed. And that creates a challenge for Edu. It probably, in some ways, it could be the trickiest summer of our kind of project so far, yep. Because if you've established yourself as a two-time title challenger and with expectations, if we don't win it this season, that next season kind of you've got to get even closer than you've managed this season, and the fear of dropping off is always there as well, and progress hopefully further in the Champions League, if not based upon what we've done this season. I don't really like talking about kind of in terms of improving, because there's still that little part of me dreaming that something this season special is still going to happen in both competitions. But it is a real challenge. And the midfield, the only names that we're getting so far is like Martin Zubimendi, of course, for another Sociedad player. And the more recent one that's been talked about is Joshua Kimmich, at Bayern Munich.
What about Onana?
So Onana in January, I got it on pretty good authority from a source on the player's side that there was certainly interest. But then when we got briefed from the club side of things, it was very much, nah. So
agent talk.
Yeah, that's a very good way to look at it. I think that with Onana, I like him. I have question marks about if he's an Arsenal player or not. That would be my big question about him. But I do like him. I just think it's one of those where you need to see it to believe it. And I'd be deferring to the recruitment team if that was the case. I like Kimmich a lot, because I think that Kimmich not only is a fantastic leader as a player and a fantastic individual in terms of his quality, but if there isn't that Declan Rice perfect partner, to bring in 29-year-old Joshua Kimmich on a 2+1 contract, similar to Jorginho, but I think of an even higher standard, would be just kind of perfect. But tell me about the midfield for you.
I mean, I think the links with Zubimendi are legit, and there's just a lot of smoke there, and I suspect probably a lot of fire too. I don't think you would say he's a sure thing, but he certainly looks like the player who could do what we need. Joshua Kimmich, like, it really just depends how you see this window of winning time for us, right? Thomas Partey, I assume, will move this summer if we can find a home for him. If not, he'll play out his contract, but he's kind of in that category of player where you can't really plan around him. So if it's one in, one out, and it's Partey out and it's Kimmich in, I think what you're saying with that signing is we think winning time for us is the next two or three seasons, right? We need to win Premier League, Champions League next season, the season after, the season after. That's our window. Once upon a time, I would have hated the idea of buying a player in that age range with this cluster of players. But as this cluster of players is moving into their prime and into their winning period, I don't hate it if you think he's exactly what we need for two seasons. Like, I don't hate it. Obviously, I'd rather we go find someone moving into their prime to play in that position and be the answer a little longer term and potentially even be improving. So maybe that's Zubimendi. There's a lot of suggestion that Bruno Guimarães is going to leave Newcastle, and we know that Arsenal had been interested before he went to Newcastle. My presumption is that PSG is where he winds up. And that's sort of the assumption there. So I like the idea of buying within the league, obviously. Mm-hmm. Especially in midfield. I think it just, you know, that they can handle the physicality and the pace of the game in the league if you do that. But I really don't know who that player would be. So Zubimendi seems likely. Kimmich is, I think, more of a win right now kind of move. Not the kind of move we've necessarily wanted to lean into, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And then, Onana, I would take him. I actually think I would take him, but if it's not happening, it's not happening. I don't really know much about it, so.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if we did, based upon. But that's January. Things can change, you know. Within 6 months, they could be convinced by him all of a sudden, and there could be more to it. We've touched upon wingers. The last area is defenders, and I go back and forth with Clive about this argument, because I felt convinced that it was the right, especially with Cedric leaving. I know that Cedric shouldn't infer anything really, but with Cedric gone, at right back you have Ben White and Timber, you'd imagine. And then at right-sided centre-back, you've got Saliba. And then I know Tomiyasu kind of comes into the conversation as well, but I kind of look at Tomiyasu in Arteta's mind as more on the left side a little bit more now than the right side. And I know he's versatile enough to play any of those positions, but I still think that for me, that right hand side, if Zinchenko is still here as well, which could also be another question mark, is do we need something else on the right to bring us depth there? Or do you lean into what Clive keeps telling me about, is that he'd like us to go for, from, I think it was Gutierrez is the name that he's talked about with me from Girona on loan from Real Madrid, is more of a traditional left back, which ironically will get some fans asking about Kieran Tierney again, I think, ironically. But yeah, what do you think?
So this is where I want to be careful, right? Because I am not a scour the YouTubes, know all the players, especially in defense kind of guy. So naming names is hard. I mean, Jarrell Hato, I guess, was a name that we've been linked with, and everybody seems to think he's a really bright young talent at Ajax, right? So I think if that's the one, then that's the one. I look at it this way. The defensive group is Timber, Kivior, Zinchenko, Tomiyasu, White, Saliba, Gabriel. That's not a bad group. I don't know, though, that I would want to invest in a pure touchline style fullback, because that player's then what do they do? If you're down a player, you need someone to come in. That's more of a horses for courses type player, right? A situational player, use them in certain situations, certain types of games. I think you want everyone in the defensive group to be someone you're comfortable just bringing in if they need to play. In that way, ironically, I think Zinchenko stands out a little as the most different to all of the profiles we have.
Absolutely.
But I think another center back who can play out wide if needed, but is a center back would be handy, because as much as I know, you know, Tomiyasu plays center back for his country and Ben White can play center back, you don't want your starting right back to also be your backup center back. You know what I mean? That's not how you want to structure it. Like, in a way, right before we got Kai playing nine, our starting center forward, Jesus, was also our backup right winger, right? I don't know that you want to build your team that way, because you're always constantly plugging one hole by creating a hole in another place. I think getting a center back, you know, Diamande is a name that I've heard, but like I think getting a center back is the way to go. Someone who is there and can compete, and Saliba doesn't start some games or Gabriel doesn't start, whichever side they can play on. Right now, it feels to me like Gabriel and Saliba have to play 38 games a season, and you don't want to be in that situation. So I think center back for me over like a touchline winger style fullback who plays only situationally.
Yeah, I'm in absolute agreement. Like, at the end of the day, he doesn't look like it, but Gabriel has had an issue that he plays with. And that obviously came to the fore in the last international break, and they used that to give him a time of rest. I was actually quite surprised that he started yesterday. I thought they might use that game as a little bit of another chance to rest him, because you've got Tomiyasu, you know, back now, for instance, who could have perhaps played there. And I know Kivior was fully rested after playing a lot of minutes for Poland and then starting the game against City also. So I was surprised to see Gabriel play. But yeah, I think that there is an opportunity that we might see that in the future. That was the last part of the team I wanted to look at. So fortunately, it brings us to a close, which is sad, but of course, always a pleasure to talk with you, Elliot. And the chat box has been very, very kind toward you throughout. They're very much fans of your stuff and the vision as well. But for those that aren't aware of who you are and what you do, tell people where they can find you and what you're going to be up to.
Yeah, I do a podcast called the Arsenal Vision Podcast. I host it, but far more intelligent people come on it and talk. You may know Clive Palmer, been on The Overlap recently. You may have heard him on the Arscast, but he's part of our podcast. Tim Stillman, Paul Cassidy, we all do the pod together, all good friends, and just really enjoy talking about Arsenal together. We do some live events from time to time. We have one coming up in Chicago, one that you did in the past. We have one coming up in London in May. We have a Patreon where we do like five extra things a week, just really try to get a lot of good content out for people. And last, certainly not least, every April, we do a fundraiser for the Arsenal Foundation. We're doing it now. If you could give, we'd appreciate it. And if you do, you're entered to win a box seat to the Bournemouth game in May, the second to last home game of the season.
There you go. Go to the link down in the description. It will be available on, of course, YouTube, but also on our audio platforms as well. If you go and do that, please do support. Anything you give, hopefully, will be doubled when reaches that £150,000 target, which is certainly, if you saw what happened last year, very much within our grasp. So do go and help out and give if you can. Elliot, massive thank you once again. Really appreciate it. Always an absolute pleasure to chat with you. And I look forward to the next podcast on The Vision. Thank you, everyone, for listening and catching up. If you are not watching us live, I'll be back with you, of course, bright and early tomorrow morning, giving you all the latest breakdown and updates regarding the club as we look ahead to the next game, which is just in another day's time. It will be tomorrow, which is the state of the season. Every single time we do another show, it feels like there's 2 days and then it's another game, because that is the reality of challenging at the very top. Tottenham wouldn't know about that, but we now certainly do. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic day, morning, afternoon, wherever you happen to be in the world, and as always, up the Arsenal. It's the 90 plus minute. All your mates around, and you've got a McNuggets share box ready to go, and you know a late winner's coming. Your mates already got booked for a double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfection. Order now on the McDonald's app for your McDelivery. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.